Welcome to my block party. Glad you can make it.
The only triple doubles you get come with fries.
Last time you blocked someone, you were online.
I can do this all day. Your moves are just gay.
Using gay to mean dumb or stupid, not cool.
Not cool.
Not in my house, not anywhere. It's not creative, it's offensive to gay people. And you're better than that.
Welcome back to Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. Folks, if you want to call into the show, if you're holding your phone and you're just not quite sure if you want to press send, please hit send. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. We would love to hear from you. Once again, that is 253-535-7332.
Okay. Hey, Christian, before we get to tough deals, can we do some breaking news?
Sure, go breaking.
So, breaking news, this just in, the Louisville Cardinals will not face NCAA sanctions in regards to investigation stemming from a former escort's claims. So that whole thing about the brothels inside the basketball dorms at Louisville, remember that whole thing that Rick Pitino got? Yeah, no sanctions.
That is a situation. That could be our whole tough deal. That's interesting.
Rick Pitino paid him off. I'm kidding.
That's interesting. All right, so our tough deal for this week has more to do with the POU football game from Whitworth last Saturday and kind of sports in general. You can broaden it out. So, like we said earlier, POU had a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter, but lost the lead and the game. So my question to everyone in the room is, when a team gets up big on their opponent, should the team then play conservatively, protect that lead, run the clock out, run whatever time in the game is left out, and try and get away with the win? Or should a team stay aggressive and put more points on the board? Like, what's the right thing to do in that situation?
So I'll kick it off here. I mean, just to kind of paint a picture, for those of you that weren't at the POU Whitworth game in the second half, our first drive offensively of the second half, we go down to the field and score. On our second drive of the third quarter, our quarterback Cole Chandler tries to throw me a corner in the end zone. And basically, if he puts the ball where it should be, I'm wide open, we score. That's two drives in a row. But unfortunately for us, the ball gets picked off. And then the next few possessions is when we did become a little bit conservative. We tried to kind of run the clock out a bit to keep Whitworth's offense off of the field. Again, which I understand because we couldn't stop them. After watching film on Monday, the plays that we had called, they should have hit. We ran quarterback draw on third down on a possession that we really needed to get a first down. And our tackle just blanks. He just forgets to pull. And so we don't get a first down. In the fourth quarter, one of our receivers in Bunch flinches on a big-time drive in the fourth quarter that costs us 5 yards, which, again, that first and 10 becomes first and 15, and it's a different ballgame. So we probably would have had that first down knowing that we got a few more yards after that flinch. As much as it seems like we were so conservative, we were, because we weren't really throwing the ball because we didn't want really any incomplete passes where the clock would stop. But at the end of the day, guys, we just didn't execute offensively. And so it comes back on us. I'm not going to blame the coaching staff. We needed to execute. We didn't. And again, you got to give a lot of credit to Whitworth. So I would say when you're up by however many points in the fourth quarter, you continue to run your offense, but you still got to execute. And that's what we did not do.
Lacey, what do you think about it? I mean, you've felt this before. You've been up in a game and maybe the starters come out, or maybe, you know, things happen to where you're cool with your lead and you chill out for a little bit. What do you think? What's the right thing to do?
Well, if we're talking about basketball, I don't think you ever take the foot off the gas. If you're rolling and you're up 20, you keep doing that. And yeah, you can take your starters out and get your younger players some reps there. Maybe in the fourth quarter, if you're up by a significant amount, then you're more patient on offense. You work the ball around and get better there instead of just fast breaking a team. Having said that, basketball is a different game than football. I think there's risk to throwing the ball in a football game. But I also think if you're up by two touchdowns or more, you shouldn't have to play timid and slow the ball down. I think you can still throw the ball and have an aggressive offense because you're up by that much. If you're only up by single digits, then yeah, maybe I'd slow it down and be more cautious there. But I think for the Whitworth game, we might have taken the foot off the gas a little early.
Okay. Even there, you know, this proves why this is a tough deal. There's merit to doing it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
You can slow down, and if you execute, like Kellen says, you can get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You can protect that 17-point lead and win the ball game and walk away with a nice W. Or, you know, if you fail to execute, maybe the other team catches fire. All of a sudden, they're on top, and you go, whoa, how'd that happen? And it's crazy. There's no right answer here. Drew, what do you think?
I alluded to it a little bit earlier, but, you know, it's the number one offense in the country, right, in terms of Division III football.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing you can do is continue to move the ball and keep them off the field, because there's to trust a defense to just stop them and leave your defense out there for long periods of time. If you're just willing to run the ball, maybe get one first down and then go three and out after one first down, it's not enough time for your defense to be off the field. Your defense is going to be tired. So I think by pulling John and keeping Cole in for that time makes PLU scarily one-dimensional, because Cole struggles to throw the ball past 15 yards with any real accuracy. And that is a problem, because, they want him in there for his escapability and be able to run the ball. But at the end of the day, if you can't move the ball down the field, who cares if he can escape the pocket?
Mm-hmm.
Because John moves the ball down the field. So by not having John in the game, you remove that. Then by putting your dime package in on a team that you know does not huddle is just another complete breakdown, because what you're sacrificing now is their ability to run the ball. And their running back is, what did you say, second in the Northwest Conference?
Yeah, second in the nation.
Second in the nation.
First in the Northwest Conference.
First in the Northwest Conference and second in the nation in touchdowns. So why would we ever want to let him touch the ball?
Mm-hmm.
So you're just asking for their most skilled offensive player in terms of all-purpose-wise to just hand the ball and let him run. And listen, I'm nothing against your dime package, but they're not a run force unit. And so there's that breakdown too. And so I feel like the game plan switched at the 11-minute mark to we're going to win to, hey, let's not lose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the problem – I don't think the problem was systematic of strategy, Christian. I think the problem was systematic of philosophy. The problem was the philosophy. There was a clear switch in what was going to happen at the 11-minute mark. It was, we're going to try not to lose and get this clock to run down. But the best way to get that clock to run down is to keep your offense on the field, not your defense.
That's fair. All right, so then if a team needs to stay aggressive to keep the win, let's say that POU stays aggressive, the
mm-hmm.
POU maybe rips off a couple more big plays from that game like they did so many times on Saturday. Now let's say they put up three more touchdowns. Now, and Whitworth doesn't score. Now, all of a sudden, we're looking at a score that's 70-something to 20-something, right? Mm. So, where can you draw the line of, okay, they were up by 17, now they're up by 30, they're disrespecting us, we're a little upset with that. Like, where does that come in? Because next year, POU and Whitworth are going to play again. There are receipts from losses like that, where teams run up the score. If you stay aggressive, you run the risk of hurting the feelings/egos of the other side, and now all of a sudden next season Whitworth comes back and they're up and POU may be down or something, you know, the way the game goes. Now all of a sudden they just scored, they did the same thing back to you. Is there ever a thought of, oh my goodness, we just ran the score up on these guys? Like, it serves as motivation for the next year is what I'm trying to get at. So where's that line,
Christian? Can I ask one question?
Sure.
Who cares?
Yeah. Who cares about the feelings of the other team?
I understand. I'm not that nice. Lacey's not even that nice, and Lacey's the nice one in the studio.
That's fair. I'm just asking a question here. Where does the line become, you know, oh, they won the game, to, oh, they did that too, out of spite against us? Now we got a nasty rivalry going on. Yes.
I understand the respect factor. If you're moving the ball down the field or on the court, mm-hmm. whatever, you handle it in a classy way. If you're going to score and you're up 30, 40, then you do it in a classy way. It's like you're just playing your game. You don't go in the end zone and celebrate and look like a bunch of jackwagons.
Okay.
Disrespect. So that's disrespectful.
So from the
the game doesn't stop because you're up by 40.
No.
So from
I'm not saying that. I'm saying you keep playing your game, but you can do it in a respectful way.
So from the athlete herself, you're saying that the score won't matter. It's how you act when you score that will cause those feelings to get harsh.
Christian, can I put it in a basketball term for in a basketball like setting for you?
Yeah.
It's if you can't stop us, that's fine. But in the last 30 seconds of the game, if you get a breakaway steal and you go dunk the ball, that's disrespectful. Mm-hmm. But if we're playing man-to-man, man up, and you're playing against us and you're kicking our butt and there's nothing we can do about it, if as long as you're doing it, playing the game the right way and you're scoring and, you know, there's not – that's part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sit here and be like, wow, they're terrible. They scored 40-plus points on us. No, what do you want me to do, hold the ball and take 10 shot clock violations? What do you want PLU to do, take four knees if they were up by 30? No, it's part of the game. If you can't stop them, that's a you problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bobby Bowden, the great coach from Florida State, used to say, it's not my job to stop my offense.
Absolutely.
And here's the thing, Christian. Yes, if we're up by 28, we're not going to throw the ball. You're going to run the ball. But it's not our fault if a simple 03X, which is our simple run play, breaks for 40. That's not disrespectful. That's Darren Hargrove, Mark Allant, whoever, Ethan McKeldry, running hard, breaking a hole. So, you know, in that case, if you're up by 21, 28, and you're still throwing, that's, in my opinion, in football where it becomes a little bit disrespectful. If it's a screen pass out to the, you know, the boundary, that's fine. But if you're running fades over the top up by 21, 28, then in my opinion, as a football player, that becomes a little disrespectful.
So it's not necessarily the score. It's not a blowout score. It's how that score gets there.
I would agree. Problem. That's my
okay.
thing.
And, right. and you mentioned looking forward to the next season even. I don't think that's necessary.
Yeah, your mind can't go there.
You deal with what's happening in the moment.
Right.
And yeah, that happens. Like even in basketball, we play each team in the conference twice in a season. So you blow them out one time. That's the excitement of sports. You come back the next time and it's like, okay, we're not letting that happen again. The other team's saying we're not letting that happen again. And then it puts a little more pressure on that team, on the team that blew them out the first time, saying, okay, we better get things done. They're going to come after us. So I think that's just sports.
Christian, to put it another way, we went to George Fox last year, and George Fox hit a buzzer beater on us and acted like they won the national championship. They won by one, but they were disrespectful about it. So it didn't matter if it was one or 41. But when they came here, we smacked them by 30.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. But we did it the right way.
All right.
In your opinion.
Well, no. We didn't act like we
There's
won the national
sides.
Championship. We
yeah.
didn't storm the floor and figure out. We walked down the line, shook hands, went to the locker room.
But a one-point win compared to 30 is different. Just the feeling of a one-point win compared to
Agreed.
30. Agreed.
Yeah. But you didn't win the national championship.
Mm-hmm.
Tough deal.
Yes.
Very good. All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to turn our sights to the University of Washington Huskies football team. We'll broaden out the subject a little bit. They're coming off a bye week. They're getting ready to play Oregon State. It's a game they're favored in, so we'll talk a little bit more Division I college football. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
My hockey career began like many players, on frozen ponds. That's why the groundbreaking partnership between the NHL and Constellation is so beneficial for the communities we play in and fans like you. Constellation and the NHL have a commitment to a clean energy future, so we join forces to offset the league's entire carbon footprint this season and work with NHL clubs to help reach their energy efficiency goals. I'm proud to be part of a league that's taking action to preserve the environment. Constellation, the NHL's preferred energy choice.
Welcome back, folks, to Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. If you want to call on the show, please do it, especially if you're a Husky fan. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332.
So like I said, this week we're going to keep it broad. The University of Washington Huskies football team hosts the Oregon State Beavers this weekend. It's a game they're favored by 33.5 points. They should win. Again, you can't expect it, Lacey. Can't expect to win, but they should, okay? So we're at the midway point of the season. Is Chris Peterson in the discussion for Coach of the Year? Lacey, what do you think?
Well, just you took the words out of my mouth. You can't expect any win, so let's take that one seriously.
Okay,
but the Dogs will win this weekend.
Okay, I will.
Chris Peterson, I think, has done a phenomenal job with this football team. The Huskies lead the Pac-12 in scoring offense and scoring defense. He was named Pac-12 Coach of the Mid-Year. But having said that, I know that's just in the Pac-12, and we're looking at a much larger map here. I think he's definitely going to be in the discussion, but I'm not sure if he'll be able to compete with some of the other coaches in the league.
That's fair.
When it comes to Washington versus Oregon State this coming weekend, my thoughts are, you know, Washington is 6-0. The roll rested coming off its bye week after destroying Oregon 2 weeks ago, 70-21. Barring a minor miracle, the Huskies are going to win this ball game. The only detail is by the final margin. But while that spread is certainly stiff at 33.5, Oregon State is down its top two quarterbacks and is going against the seventh-ranked defense in the country. Also, Washington won this matchup last season from 52-7. So in my opinion, the smart money runs here with the Huskies. I went out of network, got a quote from, in my opinion, one of the biggest Husky fans I know, and this is his thoughts on the game. My expectation is a well-rested, disciplined UW team to take care of business against a well-coached but rebuilding Oregon State team plagued with injuries. They're playing their third-string quarterback against the best defense in the Pac-12, and although coming off a great overtime win against Cal at home, I think Purple will continue to reign in Seattle, and Dogs win 52-10. Thank you so much, Micah Slifer. When it comes to the coaching question about Chris Peterson, I think he should be in the conversation. Yes, giving it to Nick Saban would be a layup. No disrespect to Nick Saban. He's, in my opinion, one of the hardest workers in Division I football and deserves to be up there as well. But the Huskies were 7-6 last year. So as Chris Brown would say, look at them now.
Drew, what do you think?
Yes, took the words right out of my mouth. This is going to be just a roll. This is not, I mean, you might as well not even turn the TV on. Might as well just watch the highlights. It's going to be an absolute roll. Now, absolutely, Coach Peterson should be in the Coach of the Year conversation. Absolutely. But right now, if you look at the major programs, everything, he probably sits 3 or 4 on the list behind the layups, as you put it, Kellen. So will he probably win? No. Should he win from what he's taken this program, from what it was to what it is now? Yes, but I mean, it's really easy to give it to Nick Saban and the guys who've been doing it so well for so long.
Drew, you've said it before. You know, Jake Browning is a big reason why this team has been successful. Drew, you've said that he should be on Heisman watch. Midway point of the season, who's everybody's Heisman winner?
I'm going to say I did some research. The top four players on Heisman watch are all quarterbacks right now. And the difference, Jake Browning stands fourth in that list, and the difference between Jake and the three players that are currently ahead of him is the rushing stats. Jake has run in 3 touchdowns this season, but only has 48 total yards rushing all season. Of the other potential Heisman winners, the quarterbacks ahead of him, the next lowest rushing yards on the season is Deshaun Watson from Clemson with 279. So that's a significant difference there. And if I were voting for a Heisman player, I'd want to pick someone who is a little more versatile, who had more options on offense there. So the three that stand ahead of Browning right now are Lamar Jackson of Louisville, Deshaun Watson of Clemson, and JT Barrett of Ohio State. But that's my opinion, guys. From there, I don't know who I'd pick.
Christian, yeah, I did. I did say you need to be on Heisman watch, and look at what do you know? All of a sudden, he pops up on the Heisman watch list as of last week. He's received 21 total votes with 2 second-place votes and 3 third-place votes. However, I don't think he will win because there's that bias that we always talk about from the southern borders all the way over to the east. There's that bias. If I had to put my money on it right now, I said at the very beginning of our college football talks, and it would be Lamar Jackson hands down for the season. He's got 1,800 yards. He's got close to a 60% completion rating. He's up to about 10 yards an attempt. He's got 15 TDs, only 4 interceptions. He's only taken 9 sacks on the year. Kid's having a fantastic year. It's awesome to see what's going on. I think the biggest endorsement of him was Michael Vick at the very beginning of this year. After his first huge game, he says, this guy is better than me when I was at Virginia Tech right now. And it's been awesome to see Lamar Jackson play.
Yeah, I got to agree with both of you guys. I mean, in my opinion, it's Lamar Jackson's job to lose. You look at the Heisman winners of the last couple of years. I'm going back a decade now. Eric Crouch from Nebraska, who was a dual threat. Johnny Manziel, guys like that who can throw the ball and run the ball. Through 6 games, Jackson's compiled 1,806 yards through the air and 832 yards on the ground, has 30 touchdowns overall, 15 apiece, throwing and running. Jake Brown, in my opinion, definitely deserves to be a top three candidate if he continues his spectacular play and the Huskies continue to win. In my opinion, the Heisman should be the best overall college football player. Again, the nice thing about Browning is, what is he? He's a sophomore. Mm-hmm. So, again, he has an amazing, bright future ahead of him. If he doesn't win it this year, again, there's always next year. But, again, he definitely deserves to be, in my opinion, in the running. And before the season started, I would have said my money's on Clemson, Deshaun Watson. I didn't really even know that much about Lamar Jackson. So before the season started, it'd be interesting to go back to sports broadcasters because I guarantee you nobody thought Lamar Jackson would be this good.
That's very interesting. Good stuff. All right, Huskies play Oregon State this weekend, a game they're favored in. Like Drew said, should be a blowout, but we'll see. You never know. All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little Seahawk football. They had a great game against the Falcons last Sunday. We'll also make our predictions and tell you what we think the Seahawks will do. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
Don't worry, 74 people were picked before me in the NFL draft.
To fight childhood obesity, United Way and the NFL are helping kids play at least 60 minutes a day.
Okay, time for the team obstacle course. Yay!
What this place needs is more healthy kids. To get involved or donate, go to unitedway.org/play60.
Now I get it.
Welcome back, folks, to Mass Radio, sports talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. If you want to call on the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332.
All right, so last weekend, the Seahawks played the Falcons. It was another fantastic football game. There was a little bit of everything. The Seahawks went up big early in the first half. They took a 17-3 lead into halftime. Then the Falcons adjusted at halftime and came back out and took the lead in the fourth quarter there. And Seahawks missed a field goal. Seahawks missed an extra point. All of a sudden, you know, Seahawks win by two. So it was an awesome football game. The Seahawks defense held one of the best offenses in the league to 3 points in the first half and 24 for the game. Is the Seahawks defense legit?
Well, let me just start off by saying I am extremely embarrassed and ashamed of doubting the Hawks this last weekend. And mark my words, it will never, ever happen again. I'll never doubt my Hawks again.
So for the rest of the games, the Hawks will win.
Okay. Yep. I'm really glad they proved me wrong. But to get back to your question, of course the Seahawks defense is legit. If that's not clear to you, after they had stopped the best offense in the league and held them to 24 points to pull out the win, then... yeah, as you said, Christian. But
a little sass.
Yeah, of course they're legit. And I do think the Hawks defense left a lot of opportunities for the Falcons on offense, especially in that third quarter there. The Falcons had a wide-open look to Julio Jones early in the third quarter, and then again at the end of the third quarter, Matt Ryan finds another wide-open pass for a touchdown. It almost looked like it was the same play, to be honest. And if you're listening to the commentators during the game, something they said a couple of times is, there's no one within 15 feet of the receiver. So that's kind of on the Hawks, fill those holes in the defense. But at the end of the day, what's most important is they were able to get the job done when it counted. The defense doesn't quit. Interception by Earl Thomas late in the fourth was the turning point for the Hawks. And to answer your question, yes, they are legit.
Kellen, what do you think?
Lacey, great work there. You said everything basically I was kind of going to say, but I think you got to focus on one player in particular in this ball game. They didn't have Cam Chancellor. Sherman was kind of in and out of the game mentally. Julio Jones was a big reason why. Earl Thomas, like you mentioned, big time interception at the end of the game. If you look at his eyes are unbelievable. It's the definition, in my opinion, of having the eye of the tiger. He's so intense. He's a guy that you want in your foxhole. He's a guy you want at the end of the game shooting free throws. What a competitor. And he really, really stuck out to me, especially at the end of the game. And again, we'll kind of get to it a little bit in the show about kind of how the game ended there. But I think the Seahawks defense, kind of like the Loot defense has been over the years, it's a bend but don't break defense. So they only give up 3 points in the first half, unreal. Yes, they give up 24 for the game, so they gave up a few more points after that. But again, They won the football game. And talk about the Falcons. You can kind of almost compare, again, Division III, NFL, totally different. But Whitworth is an amazing defense, and the PLU defense struggled. But they also rose up and made some plays. Again, the Falcons are an amazing offense. And obviously the Seahawks ended up winning that ball game because of their defense. So it's one of those things, when you play a great team like the Falcons, you're going to give a big plays. But it's how you respond. It's how you are in crisis, how you are in adversity. And Earl Thomas, without Cam Chancellor, was unbelievable.
That, you know, there were plenty of controversial plays throughout the game, and we're going to talk a little bit about each of them. Lacey, you mentioned, you know, we saw Richard Sherman himself blow a couple coverages. There was a time where, you know, the entire defense was playing, I think it was deep thirds or whatever, and Richard Sherman was man-to-man locked in on someone. It stems from a communication problem. We've seen the Seahawks struggle at times with communication. You think about last year against the Panthers, it was the same guy, Richard Sherman, blowing a coverage. Greg Olsen is wide open in the end zone and catches the game-winning touchdown. Okay, so Drew, I'll ask you, how tough is it for teams to communicate, and is this something Seahawks fans should be worried about moving forward?
Well, team unity is something the Seahawks had never had to worry about, I think, until this year. I think we've started to see fractures. I think the big egos are starting to fracture locker rooms a little bit. I think as the collective bargaining agreement comes closer and closer to being renegotiated, people are going to look for more money. I think more money causes more problems. And it's so tough to see. But at the end of the day, we saw the most special thing in sports happen. We saw the entire Seahawks team pick up Richard Sherman after that. Mm-hmm. I think that is one of the coolest things I have ever seen in sports, ever in my entire lifetime, the way they rallied around him after the couple mistakes he made. And so I think that part of the communication is good, but I think the on-field communication it's wavering a little bit.
And to your point there, Drew, especially in the NFL, I mean, you don't really see that. You don't see, because what happened was Sherman and Chancellor were kind of going at it, and you saw the team rally around both those guys. Sherman was struggling. He was frustrated. Even after the game, they still won. He's not the happiest guy after the game. So like you said, Drew, for that to happen in the NFL, these guys are professional athletes, but yet they still get what it means to be a team. And that's why the Jacksonville Jaguars are who they are. That's why the Jets are who they are. They don't have team unity like the Seahawks do.
That's fair. That's fair. Let's hit another controversial topic. In the second half, we saw Michael Bennett get cut blocked by Jake Matthews of the Atlanta Falcons. You know, a cut block is a move where the offensive lineman or whoever is making the block kind of dives at the waist, more so the knees. The hit was legal, but it was certainly, you know, not fun to watch. Bennett was shaken up on the play. He returned to the sideline, but he didn't come back in the game. So, Lacey, I'll ask you, in your opinion, was the cut block needed? Was it a dirty play, and how do you feel about it?
Well, just to start off, I don't know if you guys were able to hear kind of Michael Bennett's responses to the play. He was heated about it, and there were some nasty words thrown around. For lack of a better word, he said the block was a pansy move.
Which, wow.
I couldn't agree more. I think, yes, it was legal, but it's just kind of disrespectful to the player. I mean, in my opinion, the game wasn't on the line, and I don't know if I'm seeing things differently, but I didn't think Bennett was even that close to Matt Ryan for Matthews to be taking a hit like that on him. I think it kind of goes back to that respect thing where we talked about in our tough deals. It's like, have respect for the player you're playing against. You guys are both out there trying to win a football game, and you're going to do what you have to do to get it done. But going after a player to, I don't know if it was an intentional to try and hurt him or what, that's just not okay. But to look at the other side of that, we're not on the field with these guys. We don't know what they're saying between plays. They could have been chirping at each other all game, and this was just kind of the tipping point for them. So, but in my opinion, don't think the block was very classy or respectful. Bennett's lucky to be okay. If he wasn't, I'd be scared. I'd be scared if I was Matthews.
It certainly was not fun to watch. So lastly, you know, there was controversy at the very end of the game. Kellen, you're a wide receiver, and on the final play of the game, it was noted that Richard Sherman pretty much got away with pass interference when Matt Ryan tried to connect with Julio Jones. Sherman pinned one of Julio Jones' arms to his own side, which is pass interference, but where the referee who would have made the call was behind the play. didn't necessarily see it, and if you can't see something, you can't call something. So what are your takeaways, Kellen, from that final play?
The fact that that play was not pass interference is inconceivable. I cannot believe they allowed that to happen. Granted, Christian, from your point of view, from the perspective of the ref, if he couldn't see, if Julio Jones jumps up with two hands, but one arm is the one that only is up, something had to have happened to the other arm. And what happened to the other arm was Richard Sherman did a veteran move, and he hooked it. He hooked it, and Julio Jones could only go up with one hand, almost catches the football if you watch the play closely. It's frustrating because as a receiver, if that was me going against, you know, some Lewis and Clark DB, whoever it may be, that would be the most frustrating thing, especially knowing that in the NFL, if they call that play, they get the football right where they call it. And so the Falcons have the ball there with, I'm not sure how much time would be on the clock, but they kick a field goal. If he makes it, again, that's not a gimme shot, especially at CenturyLink, but they possibly win that football game. And so I just can't imagine how frustrating it would be for Julio and as well as Matt Ryan, because they dialed up a great play call. And the Seahawks did a great job. They put their two best players on Julio. They had Sherman jamming him, and then they had Earl Thomas over the top. Again, you could also look at the play before that possible PI. Julio does hit Sherman in the face, so that could have been hand-to-the-face call. But again, they're probably not going to call that on the last play of the game. But that PI call, I just think it was so blatant that his body contorts that way, and it was so frustrating because a guy – and I did pick the Falcons to win, so it's not like I'm bitter. But as a receiver, knowing what Julio went through and he doesn't get any calls, that's a tough deal.
I was the only one who picked the Hawks to win last week, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
Mm. So there were a bunch of takeaways from that Falcons-Seahawks game. It was everything we can ask for, and it was awesome.
Great game.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move on. The Seahawks go on the road this week to play the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals are actually favored in this game, coming off of two straight wins. So let's make our predictions. Lacey, what do you got this week?
The Seahawks will win, as I promised, I will say, for the rest of the season. The Cardinals have had a number of turnovers this season. When I think of turnovers, I think of basketball, and with turnovers, you're not necessarily getting beat by another team. You're almost beating yourself with turnovers. Those are total controllables, in my opinion, and that's something the Cardinals haven't been able to figure out this season. And with the Hawks defense going up against them, like Kellen said, Hawks defense has the eye of the tiger. They're gonna eat that up.
All right, Drew, what do you think this
week? Well, so I'm a big Check the Vegas Lines guy, and early this game was a pick 'em because the Cardinals have won the last two or three at C-Link, and the Hawks had won the last three in Arizona, all in blowout fashion. So it's kind of one of those things. David Johnson, I think, is probably the best running back in football right now. Mm-hmm. I think Larry Fitzgerald has somehow turned back the hands of time and has decided he's going to be the receiver he once was for just one more season. Carson Palmer's aging. They're going to Arizona. Hawks have blown them out the last three times. But you know what? Cardinals are hot. I'm going to say the Hawks will lose. So the Seahawks will lose this Sunday.
Interesting. All right, Kellen, what do you think?
I think the Hawks will win. Great points there, Drew. But in my opinion, Arizona just isn't quite the same team. With wide receiver Larry the Goat Fitzgerald and David Johnson, arguably a top two running back, Carson Palmer has some of the league's best weapons at his disposal. But the quarterback isn't having anywhere near the MVP caliber season that he once had a year ago, making the Cardinals beatable at home. In four games against the Seahawks since 2013, Palmer has thrown six touchdowns and eight interceptions. In three of those games, Palmer has posted a passer rating of 70.4 or worse. What is he, Brian Hoyer? Throwing for an average of 188.3 yards. Coming off a game against the NFL's number one ranked offense, Seattle held its own, only allowing 24 points in a two-point victory. Prior to that contest, the Seahawks hadn't allowed more than 18 points in any game. No NFL team surrenders fewer total points than the Seattle Seahawks. In my opinion, the score is going to be Seattle 28, Arizona 17. But again, Larry Fitzgerald, one of my favorite players of all time. His jersey's hanging up in my room, autographed. You got to give that guy a ton of credit. He's Vino, Drew.
Nicely done, Kellen. Good points made. I'm going to go with on Sunday the Seahawks will lose.
Atta baby, Christian. Stand with me, baby.
The Cardinals coming off two straight wins. Like Drew said, they are hot right now.
Well, it's in Arizona. They are hot.
Oh, good one. Weather
good
joke.
One.
Weather
that was
joke.
Funny.
Grandpa Kellen. High turnover numbers have caused the Cardinals games this season, but they're rushing for the fourth best average in the NFL at 124.3 yards per game. You're talking about, what was his name, David Johnson?
David Johnson.
Yeah, one of the best running backs in the league. Numbers show it. Cards are also the fifth best defense in the league, allowing 295 yards per game. It's a division rivalry. They're familiar opponents. I'm sure the Cardinals are tired of getting blown out at home. Mm. They got to make a stand at some point. I'm going to go with the Cardinals at home.
Well, Christian, Lacey, and I disagree, but thank you very little. All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will take a look at a segment called Would You Rather. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
My hair is kind of different.
Not everyone likes the way I dress. And I don't look like other people.
Me neither. Everyone is different, but no one deserves to be bullied. So be kind, stay positive, and support each other.
Every single day.
Welcome back to Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes. We want to thank Heine for coming in the studio today. Folks, this is our last segment. If you want to call into the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332. Also, don't forget to like our YouTube page.
Half Athlete Radio on YouTube. You can catch segments of the show whenever you want and however you want.
It's Look at just, that shameless plug.
We're more easy to listen to than ever before, and it is great. So check us out on YouTube. All right, let's play a little Would You Rather. Let's close it out. Let's have a little fun here. I'm going to throw out, you know, some different scenarios, and the cast here is going to tell us, you know, what they would rather have. So let's start it out. Would you rather lose a close game or get blown out?
I would rather get blown out. I would not want to keep myself awake at night wondering what would have happened if one call went one way or, you know, if one call would have gone the other way. For me, it's been hard to sleep after this Whitworth game because for me as a competitor, it's like, well, what if I ran this route, you know, a little bit skinnier or, you know, what if somebody didn't go off sides or what if this, what if that? And it's been frustrating. If I get blown out, I know that team was flat out better than me that day. And you don't want to accept that, but at the end of the day, you have to because you got a team the next week to play. So when it comes to close games, they are so frustrating because, again, like I said this week, haven't had a lot of sleep. I still think about that game. I have to flush it, knowing that we got Fox on Saturday. But I literally cannot stop thinking about what we could have done differently.
How about you, Liz?
I would rather lose in a close one, just knowing that you gave your full effort and it was a battle the whole game.
That's fair.
I'd rather get blown out. I'm with Kellen. Those close losses keep me up at night, man. I like my sleep. I like my sleep a lot.
All right, let's do a food question. Would you rather eat the same thing before every game forever? Would you rather get into that routine? Or would you rather eat something different before every game? Do you not need that routine? Like, let me know.
Christian?
Yes.
I ain't superstitious, baby. I'm just careful. I will eat the same thing before every game without fail. At the same exact time, at the same exact increments. There is no way I'm breaking that routine.
Was it a Frugal's burger?
There is no way. There is no way I'm breaking anything. So on the road, it is Applebee's. The basketball team does it every time.
Not by choice, right?
The basketball team does it every time. It is a routine that we do. We do it the exact X amount of hours before a game. We always get there at that exact time because Coach Dickerson is like that. And then at home, it's something. It's usually kind of depends on what I'm feeling. I would usually go with maybe like light quesadilla, a little bit of pasta. It just kind of depends.
All right. Light quesadilla.
Light quesadilla.
Light quesadilla. Interesting. Right. I am a fan of routine. I do the same. Eat at the same time before every game.
Atta girl.
That kind of stuff. But I don't eat the same thing. So I don't care what I'm eating. I've had a funny story. Before we played UPS last season, who we took into overtime, I was in the locker room before the game, and I had two Lunchables in front of me, both pizza Lunchables. And Coach walks in, and she goes, "You better have the best game of your life."
Interesting.
That's awesome.
So if you, Lacey, if you go off one of these times, you're not going to stick to what you had before the game. Like,
no, I'm not superstitious.
All right. Oh, interesting.
Neither Kellen, am I. I'm careful.
Kellen, what do you think?
Yeah, when it comes to food, it's really whatever's in front of me. But I do drink a Pedialyte every night and before every game, right before kickoff. So Pedialyte, shout out to them.
What does that do?
It basically gives you the best electrolytes possible. It's kind of for children when they're young, but it's great for
infants. It prevents you from infants.
It prevents you from cramping.
Yeah, Christian, it prevents you from cramping.
Okay, thanks for educating me, half athlete. Cramp. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Two for 11 at Walgreens.
Two for 11?
Two for 11.
$11?
They're like this big.
Where are you working?
Expensive.
Where are you getting? Where are you getting your Pedialyte fund for one every night? Dude,
I peel you a gift card. Sorry, Dad.
All right, let me know. Would you rather watch the Major League Baseball playoffs or the NBA preseason?
Oh, the playoffs in a heartbeat. Playoff baseball is a different world compared to Game 6 of the opening season when it comes to baseball. NBA preseason, yes, it's fun. It's fun to see Curry. It's fun to see Durant. Those guys play together. But MLB playoffs, they have been so much fun to watch. Shout out to the Indians. Shout out to the Cubs. Shout out to the Rainiers. I don't know why I said that.
I would rather watch the National League side of the MLB playoffs.
Oh, he's getting specific.
If it's the American League side, I'm watching the NBA preseason. But the National League side, it's better stories, better players, better superstars. I'm watching the National League playoffs.
Christian, you changed this question because before coming into the show, I thought the question was going to be NBA preseason or NFL preseason. And if that were the case, I would pick NFL every time. But
oh my goodness, since... Lacey. Okay, keep going.
Since... We're talking baseball. I'm going to have to watch basketball over baseball any day, no matter what time of the season it is.
That's sad.
Ugh, that is crazy. But really, though, like the NFL preseason over the NBA preseason, the NFL preseason is garbage.
Yeah,
it's so
but
bad.
The NFL only, you only have so many football games in a year. There are hundreds of basketball games that go on.
Okay, then it's still really bad football. There's no getting around that. Okay. All right, the last one, a Kellen Westring submission. Would you rather date an extremely attractive person who knows nothing about sports or date somebody who loves sports but might not be as attractive as that person we mentioned before?
Lacey, you have to start. As the only woman in the room, you have to start.
I would rather date a six who knows who knows their sports well. But I'm only going to go with a six, nothing lower than a six.
Who knows sports really well?
Nothing lower than a six.
So a six who knows sports really well is in for you.
Yes. I can't date someone who doesn't know sports. That's I have nothing in common with that person. So.
Okay. That's interesting.
Kellen.
It's a little different for guys.
Have you seen She's the Man?
Yes.
Remember Monique?
Yeah.
I can't deal with her. So I would absolutely date someone who loves sports but might not be quite as attractive. You got to look at the heart. Look at the heart.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, I mean, girls.
Completely cannibalizing the question.
Girls that wear makeup, you just want to whitewash me on their face. It's just too much makeup. You got to love someone who's natural. I would take natural beauty any day of the week. Someone who loves sports, obviously.
So me and Heiner are both sitting over here, and we both said the same thing at the same time. And it was, we're going to date the guy, but we're going to convert him into the best sports fan of all time.
Oh.
So, very interesting.
So Kellen, I said, so Kellen, Lacey, I understand. I feel you. I get it. Like, as the sports fan, like, yes, been there, done that. We all have.
Side story, I took a girl that I dated in high school, and we were at I was scouting another team. I was scouting Puyallup High School. And she's sitting by me, and she's definitely an 11 out of 10. And and we're sitting there talking, and she's like, hey, Kel, what inning is it?
Oh.
Oh.
Good Lord.
Are you lying?
Not lying.
Wow.
Did you break up with her right there?
The next day, it was over. She was off my MySpace top friends, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah. So Haya and I would date the dime and just convert him into the greatest sports fan ever.
All right.
Christian, how about you? How come you never get to answer any of these questions?
Christian will answer. Well, I kind of, you know, if... I'm already in that dime category who doesn't necessarily love sports.
You're already in
you
that
can,
category.
You can check her out at Salon 1121 in Tacoma. She is very good at cutting hair. She can do color. She can do anything. She can even give Scott Westring his perms. So it's fun to get a different perspective. Sports is all I do. So to hang out with a person and get a different kind of take on what's going on.
It's a breath of fresh air.
And it really is. And I enjoy it. I'm not going to change much here. So, yeah.
Well, but you guys aren't going to go play catch in the front lawn.
It's very tough to get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like it. So.
But you can convert her. Just make sure she puts it above.
She knows
face.
Enough. She's not in total love with sports, but she knows enough where we could watch something and she could pay attention if she chooses.
I think one thing
she doesn't, but
we
she
have
could.
To understand is that there are other things more to life than sports. We have to accept that sometimes.
What?
But we just don't care about those as much.
Do we have another question?
Do you want another question? Make one up. I don't know.
I thought we were doing, would you rather be a cheerleader or a mascot?
Okay, we can talk about that. Yeah.
I'd rather be a mascot, hands down, just because I could be as crazy animated. I could tick players off as much as I want, mess with opposing players as much as I want, and you can't see my face, so you have no idea who it is.
But you do that already.
Exactly, I do. That is my.
But you don't get in trouble for it if you're a mascot.
Yeah, but you don't get in trouble for it if you're a mascot. I like it. Mascot, hands down.
Kellen,
I'd love to see you in a skirt, babe.
Yeah, you know what? I'd like to be a male cheerleader one time. That'd be kind of fun. Work on my, military press.
Is it athletic?
Athletic, absolutely.
It is athletic. So cheerleading
is
a sport?
Hard.
Is it a sport?
I would say it's not a sport. I'm so sorry. If
it's not a sport.
It is.
But it is hard work.
Okay,
it is hard work.
May I? Here. Yeah. Cheerleading is a sport. What they do on ESPN is a sport. The really high competition, tumbling, things like that, that's a sport.
Yeah. PLU cheerleading, debatable. It's an activity.
Okay,
that's fair.
Can I put my two cents in? I would rather be a cheerleader.
Than
because
a mascot?
I don't want to be in some sweaty, disgusting mascot
you show
suit.
Off the pretty face,
they are
huh?
very
you
gross.
Show off
all
the money maker?
Day.
They're very gross. Mascot
Me and my
suits
no
are
makeup.
Gross.
I got to show it off.
Very gross. All right, that'll do it for today. We don't have much more. We're going to end on that. That was fun. Today's been a great show. I a lot of fun in here in studio. Make sure to listen to Laser all weekend long. You could hear tons of interesting shows here on this radio station. Kellen, good luck this week in George Fox.
Thank you, folks. Aspire to inspire before you expire.
That was rough.
Oh, good Lord in heaven. Can we be done now?
Why?
Is that going to be our
what
new
is that?
Off?
What does that mean?
Let's think about it.
Break it down. Break it down.
Aspire to inspire people before you expire, which is when you pass away.
So.
Wow.
Want to inspire people before you die
so
is what you just said.
Want to be a leader. Want to be a role model. I got you, Kellen.
Don't
AIE.
Don't just die. Do something.
Don't just die.
Okay.
All right. That's Kellen Westering for Lacey Nicholson and Drew Artisoni. My name is Christian Bond. Tune into the show next week, Thursday, 9 a.m. We're out of here. See ya.